I mean, I was told by my film professor, there are films and there are movies. And sometimes you've got to know what you're walking into.
Yeah. See, but I come from a time when movies were films.
Another month as a cinephile down the drain, which means another month of really just watching movies alone in my house. It may sound on the surface like a very sad lifestyle, but it's very riveting. You'd be surprised. I don't exactly believe in New Year's resolutions. I think they're somewhat corny and kind of pointless. But if I did have one for 2024, it would be to watch 365 movies in 1 year, which I'm making pretty decent progress towards it. This month, no different. April, we watched 28 different movies. A lot of bangers, a lot of good movies, a lot of not so good movies, but overall, a somewhat consistent month for quality. Logged a couple of 5-star movies, a overall pretty average amount of 4.5 out of 5-star films. So I thought I'd come in here today and give you guys everything that I watched in the month of April from the start of the month to the end of the month. If you want to follow along, you can go ahead and go onto my letterbox down below in the show notes. Letterboxd obviously being really one of the best apps ever created in human history. So go on there and you can check out my account and really see everything that I watched the entire month and also what I watched in the month of April, an overall pretty exciting month. This month for me was somewhat decent, kind of slow, kind of boring, kind of uneventful. There's not really a general theme that I had going in the month of April. So I'm going to try to keep this episode relatively quick, relatively short, get you guys out of here kind of quickly. I'll try to keep every single film in about 1 to 2 sentence reviews here, kind of get you guys out of here in a quick pace. But really, most importantly, I want to know, what did you watch the month of April? Was it something cool? Probably a lot better than me, but I want to find out. If you're listening on Spotify, I'll make sure to go ahead and post that question on there for you. But if you're not on Spotify, still try to let me know. Well, with all that egregious yap time out of the way, I'll go ahead and start diving into everything that I watched in the month of April, starting from my first movie of the month being on April 2nd. Kicking us off here in the month of April, on April the 2nd, I watched Pixar's Soul, a much-needed rewatch for me. I really wanted to feel something. I kind of get kind of lost in this big, vast world and the big universe, and I kind of forget who I am and my place in everything. And Soul is a beautiful exploration of meaning of life and also purpose and what life really means to really everyone. This film has so much depth, and I really love this movie a lot more on the second watch than the first time I watched it. This film came out back in 2020, a year where I was really, I think, critiquing films to a really kind of critical extent for no reason. I gave this film at first like a 3.5 out of 5 stars, and this time around, I gave it a modest 4.5 out of 5, which is much deserved. So Pixar's Soul is definitely worth your time. After Soul, I dived into The Hateful Eight from Quentin Tarantino. A Quentin Tarantino film that I've been meaning to watch for a pretty long time here, and this movie is good. It's not exactly great, but it's a solid flick. It's still a Tarantino movie, but I feel like it's trying to do something, and it doesn't achieve really too good at what it's trying to do, which makes it really struggle. It's still a Tarantino movie, like I said before, so it's an overall pretty solid flick. The cinematography is there, the acting's there, the screenplay is masterful. Really, on all facets, it's an overall pretty consistent movie, but the concept isn't really doing a lot here. It's not as good as it can be, which makes it really frustrating to go through, but it's still enjoyable watch. After The Hateful Eight, I rewatched Past Lives from last year, a movie that is definitely one of my favorite films really ever made. This is really a romance film that doesn't really compare to anything else I've ever seen before. Past Lives is truly something incredibly special. Mentally, I'm in the world of Past Lives, even over a month after I dived into it. If you still haven't seen Past Lives, I'm not sure what you're doing. After Past Lives, I dived into Pixar's Ratatouille. Ratatouille, the absolute masterpiece, one of my favorite films ever made, and a truly exquisite experience even all these years later. There's something truly special about films and movies and really watching them and making them, and Ratatouille is one of those few examples that can really show just how good movies can be. I gave this film a very modest and understandable 5 stars. Not a lot I need to say about this movie. You already know how good it is, and I love it just so much even after every single watch. After Ratatouille, that same day, I dived into the Hannah Montana movie, a film that I didn't think I would be watching that day, but this is really, I think, one of the greatest movies ever made. Miley Cyrus being probably one of the best actresses of the generation, and The Climb in this movie is one of the best written songs in the art form of music. I wish I could say that's satire, but it's absolutely not. Hannah Montana the movie is truly one of my favorite films ever made. I gave the Hannah Montana movie a very modest 3.5 out of 5 stars, but this movie truly is absolutely exquisite, absolutely masterful, an absolute banger of a movie. After Hannah Montana the movie, I dived into Batman Mask of the Phantasm. This one's special. This one's so different. I love Batman Mask of the Phantasm. I have for years, and I still do to this day. This movie really just never gets old. It hits every single time. The animation, the score, the story is so beautiful. This is such a thematically rich Batman movie. Definitely within the top five of Batman movies of all time, and it always will be. Kevin Conroy, thank you for this movie and really everything that he's done in the entire Batman character world. It's just always just incredible what he's able to do with it, and Mask of the Phantasm is probably the best Batman animated thing ever. After Batman Mask of the Phantasm, my first trip to the cinema this month was for Monkey Man from Dev Patel, a movie that I didn't get a chance to do a review on, didn't really want to, but this movie was definitely impressive. I feel like it had a lot of weight on it to be incredible and a lot of pressure for this movie to be just really good from a directorial debut, which is really weird. But Dev Patel definitely showed that he has a lot of talent, a lot of love for movies, and that shows in every single second of this movie. It's really a much more dirtier and sometimes grittier version of John Wick. And if that's what you like in a movie, then this is definitely for you. The action choreography is just banging all the time. The set design, the costume design, the acting from Dev Patel is really hitting. It's on point here, but it's just not that good. I gave it a 4 out of 5. It's a solid score, but I really think this movie could have been better. It's not as big as it can be. It's not as good as it can be. It starts out kind of slow. It's kind of cliche and predictable at moments, which can make it just pretty entertaining at times. But at the same time, I really want this movie to be doing more. It's a solid flick, incredibly well done. Dev Patel, you did amazing, but it could have been better, but I still love it. After Monkey Man, a pretty good movie, I dived into Batman Under the Red Hood again. I'm pretty sure I watched this movie last month before this, and I had to watch it again this month because this movie is just really emotional, really heartbreaking. It's, for some reason, a very weirdly sad comfort movie for me. It always will be. This movie is just absolutely exquisite. Almost makes me cry on every single watch, and really always will. Jensen Ackles did an incredible job, and Batman is just truly, after every single piece of Batman, anything that I dive into, proving to be the best superhero ever, probably close to Spider-Man. I love Tazim, I love a lot of the Spider-Man stuff, but Batman, and really a lot of the adaptations, is just so well done. Batman Under the Red Hood, really no different. This is just one of the most thematically deep movies for Batman, and one that if you haven't seen already, I'm not sure what you're doing. After Batman Under the Red Hood, I dived into Baby Driver. Edgar Wright should definitely be directing every single movie out there because Baby Driver is a movie that I didn't really enjoy on the first watch, but the second time around, I loved it a lot more compared to the first time. I never exactly hated this movie from Edgar Wright, but just this movie being a fun neo-noir drive from Ryan Gosling, but more high-octane and energetic version of that, is just truly exquisite and incredible. The soundtrack slaps, the car stunts are incredible. This movie was just really awesome. I love this one. I wish I could have watched Baby Driver on every single watch of this entire month, but sadly I could not. After that, I dived into the greatest hits from 2024. This movie is, I'm not going to waste too much time on it, not that good. It's not worth your time. It's not terrible exactly, but it's just not good either. I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. The concept is really cool. It's pretty much about a girl whose boyfriend dies and she has to listen to music to travel back in time to a song that they were listening to. A concept that may sound stupid, but in actuality, it has moments of being almost a great movie. It has some depth here and there, and then it just doesn't do anything for a lot of the runtime. It stays very stagnant. It goes somewhere, but it doesn't need to be as long as it is. The pacing feels just very mismanaged, very slow and boring, very cliche, and sometimes cliche is good. In this instance, not so much. Once again, not exactly a terrible film. It's slightly above average for me, but I wouldn't really recommend it. As of right now, The Greatest Hits from 2024 is the worst movie of the year for me. That's definitely going to change, but for now, it's just not there. After The Greatest Hits from 2024, I started diving into the Cars trilogy, starting off with Cars 2006. And you may be asking me, Logan, you're like a 20-year-old man. Why are you watching the Cars trilogy? Well, I'm an oversized kid. I can't let go of a lot of stuff. I bought the Lightning McQueen Crocs this year because I'm really that much of a man. All jokes aside, I started diving into this trilogy. Cars 2006 is probably the best one in the trilogy. Yeah, I'll say that confidently. The best one here in the entire trilogy. This one slaps, it bangs, it rips. It has so much nostalgia for me, and I'm always going to love it. Now, from a Pixar standpoint, this movie and this whole trilogy of Cars films aren't that good. They all kind of feel hollow and soulless at times. But I have to admit, in terms of nostalgia, this one's up there for me. After Cars 2006, I dived into Empire of Light from 2022. This movie is one that's been on my watch list for a pretty long time, like over a year. This movie is really well shot, incredibly well shot. The acting's really good. It's from Sam Mendes, who also did 1917. This movie really wants to be that movie. It feels very Oscar-baity at times. The cinematography's great. The score is really beautiful as well. Those elements outside of the movie, technically, and the directing, all of that is really good. But the writing itself is not there. I see what this movie was really going for, and it has heart. It has a sense of what it wants to be, but how it's doing it isn't that good. Not exactly a terrible film, but once again, just like with the greatest hits from earlier this month, this movie really fails at trying to be what it wants to be, which makes it struggle along the way and really makes it frustrating because you know in the back of your head, this movie really could have been just so good, but it sadly is not. Regardless, definitely one of the movies that I watched this month that had some of the most heart out of the entire month, from Olivia Colman giving an incredible performance, Michael Ward really just popping off in this movie, an actor who doesn't have a lot of roles, but I want to see him in more stuff because in this film, he's really good. To be as old as he is, not that old, I mean, he's kind of a younger actor, really acting on par alongside a legend that is Olivia Colman is truly deserving of a lot of respect. But I have to admit, just because of how boring it is and just how soulless and tasteless and kind of lost it feels in the entire runtime, I would recommend it really because of how beautiful it is, but just prepare to be disappointed. After Empire of Light, I dived into X-Men Origins Wolverine. We did a full podcast episode on this one that's almost 30 minutes long, so I'm not going to touch into it too much, but once again, this movie is a lot of nostalgia for me. I watched this film at least like 10 times in my entire life. But is it good? No, and you already know that. After X-Men Origins Wolverine, I really needed more of a palate cleanser this month, so I started diving into the Richard Linklater Before trilogy. This trilogy is one of the best trilogies of all time, very consistent throughout the entire trilogy. I can say that for, you know, trilogies like Lord of the Rings, very consistent. The Dark Knight is somewhat consistent. The first two films are good. The Dark Knight Rises is also really good, but it's not really there. This trilogy, although, is very not so much popular as compared to the Dark Knight trilogy and also Lord of the Rings, but this trilogy, the Before trilogy, is really better than a lot of the trilogies out there. I dive into the first film, Before Sunrise, and this movie is my favorite in the trilogy. This is a top 5 romance of all time. I would recommend you watch this as soon as possible. If you haven't seen the Before trilogy, what are you doing? And just for context of the Before trilogy, every movie takes place 9 years later, and they waited 9 years to film the next movie. So the first film came out in 1995, the second movie came out in 2004, and it's just truly a interesting way to make a movie because it takes a lot of commitment to it, which makes it have just so much more heart and so much more pressure to make it right. I mean, you see how the Infinity Saga took 10 years to really get all completed. This trilogy just going from one movie to the next took 9 years. That's a lot of pressure to make one movie a lot more better and so much more deserving of being witnessed. It's really good. Before Sunrise is my favorite right now, but the older you get, the more you understand the later movies in this trilogy, Before Sunset, Before Midnight, equally as good, but Before Sunrise, as of right now, is my favorite movie. It's the one that has the most magic of romance and what love really is, more of the fantasy elements that love can have. The further you go into this trilogy, the more real it gets, the more raw it gets, the more you're going to want to cry because of just how emotional and how real everything feels. But Before Sunrise, a very modest 4.5 out of 5, a 9 out of 10, which is absolutely deserved. After Before Sunrise, once again, kind of feeling kind of lost. What does my place in this universe even mean? So I started diving into Francis Ha from Noah Baumbach. This movie is, I think, one of the best indie movies ever made. Really one of the only indie films I've ever seen in my life. But this movie is just perfect. It's incredible. I love this flick so much. This is definitely going to become one of my comfort watches. It's just incredible, from Greta Gerwig delivering an incredible performance to Noah Baumbach really paying homage to the French New Wave era of film. It's awesome. It's incredible. The cinematography, the characters, the score, the lighting, everything about it. I love it. We also did a full episode on Francis Ha a long time ago, so I'm not going to need to dive into it too much here. After Francis Ha dived into Before Sunset from Richard Linklater, this movie takes place in 2004, and Before Sunset is, I think, one of the greatest sequels ever made. This one is the shortest in this trilogy, but it's just so good. It really just is worthy of waiting 9 years. For a movie that's only like an hour and 20 minutes long, it really just feels effortlessly incredible. But after Before Sunset, I had to go to the cinema for a second time this month to see Civil War. And this movie I had seen get a lot of divisiveness online. But Civil War is definitely a divisive movie because the Civil War in this movie isn't even the biggest part of the film, which is very weird. But Civil War, I think, is a very well done movie. From what it is trying to do and the story that it is telling, it's very interesting. It has a lot of nuance to it, a lot of depth to it. And you should definitely watch it, not for the Civil War aspect, but the story inside of Civil War. It's very weird and it's very just frustrating because you were marketed to have a full-scale Civil War action movie. And there's only like maybe two scenes of action sequences, if that. It's kind of a small movie and it's kind of more about the characters than the actual war itself. It definitely offers for a very cool set piece and almost like a backdrop to this movie. But if this film took place in Pakistan or Afghanistan inside of 2024, the movie would be really no different. We don't even know exactly why the Civil War started inside of Civil War, which can be really frustrating. Then also at the same time, kind of what makes it that much better. I'm really conflicted between loving this movie and also hating it. I gave it a 4 out of 5 though. I really enjoyed it for what it was, but I can't deny that if you are frustrated by the movie, I definitely understand why. After Civil War, I dive into Little Women from Greta Gerwig, and Little Women from Greta Gerwig is maybe her best movie. Lady Bird is a banger. I love Lady Bird, but Little Women is really something special. I mean, yeah, I know that, you know, Lady Bird is really the obvious, hey, this is her best movie, but Little Women, if you haven't seen that already, or if you haven't seen it in a while, this movie is so much better on rewatch. Even the first watch, this movie is really good, but after I watched it again, I really was able to see just how good this movie was. I'm a 20-year-old man, and I'm even thinking about going to the store and buying a copy of Little Women to pick up and start reading through. The acting's incredible, the score is incredible, the cinematography is absolutely masterful. On all facets, this movie is firing on just such incredible filmmaking. If you haven't seen Little Women, what are you doing? I'm probably going to watch it again like right after I record this episode because it's just that good. After Little Women, dived into Cars 2. This movie is really well known for being one of the worst films ever made. And although I will admit this movie is very dumb and one of the dumbest decisions that a studio can ever make in their entire life, I think that Cars 2 is enjoyable. It's entertaining. I watched this movie once again, maybe like 10, 15 times in my entire life. So it has a lot of nostalgia for me. I think Mater being the main character is a very just not smart decision to take that large of a jump from the first film to this movie when you really should have focused on Lightning McQueen and making him a better character and this trilogy really being a character-driven trilogy. And this movie was definitely just a large setback for them in terms of what this trilogy could be. But still, for what it is, Cars 2, it's really more of a pipe dream of a movie that was written by a fan. But I still have to admit, this movie is very enjoyable. It's very fun and entertaining. Despite the stupidity, I had a fun time. I can't lie. After Cars 2, dived into The Master from Paul Thomas Anderson. And Paul Thomas Anderson is easily one of my favorite directors of all time. He's hit that level for me. He's hit that point for me. From There Will Be Blood to the incredible movie that is Licorice Pizza. Not a lot of people know about Licorice Pizza, but Licorice Pizza, probably his best movie, to Phantom Thread, to The Master now that I watched. Master is really a very interesting movie. It's very complex. It doesn't do a lot of telling the audience exactly what it's about, which is kind of what makes it good. I noticed that Paul Thomas Anderson is a kind of director that tells you the story, but he doesn't really just kind of spoon feed you all the exposition, all the information, who these characters are, who their motives are, what this movie is about. It's not really all laid out there for you, which for me makes the film more interesting. For other people, it makes it kind of frustrating, which I can't really argue with. I was reading a review from Roger Ebert who watched the movie at a festival or whatever, and then he said that it's good and it shot really well, the acting's all there, everything is good, but what is it trying to tell, which isn't really all laid out there. For me, I was able to kind of pick up exactly what the film's themes are, which makes it that much more interesting and intriguing. I'm not going to say it here, but for other people, it may not be all laid out for them. They may not see it on first watch, which can be interesting. I don't think that movies need to be exactly spoon-fed to the audience. We sometimes don't need to know everything. Sometimes we aren't really obligated to know everything about a movie, and that kind of bends the rules. It breaks a lot of big rules to a lot of big filmmakers. But for Paul Thomas Anderson, I think that's just kind of a cooler way to go about filmmaking. But as for The Master, go watch it. If you love anything from Paul Thomas Anderson, this one's really good. I wouldn't really recommend you to start with The Master. I say start with like Licorice Pizza or Phantom Thread and then go into some things like this. But this one's really good. I can't lie. After The Master, I dive into The Iron Claw from last year, a film that I really missed out on. And I'm really sad that I missed out on seeing this in theaters. The Iron Claw is incredible. It's really good. This is one of the most tragic films of the decade so far. One of my favorite films of the decade as well. This movie is just incredibly well shot, incredibly acted. Zac Efron was truly robbed of an Oscar. And this movie speaks for itself. I'm not going to say a lot about it. It's really sad, really tragic, makes me want to cry. But movies speak for themselves a lot of the time. And this movie says enough for itself. And I can never do it justice in anything. I would recommend you watch it like right now. As of this recording, I don't think that The Iron Claw is streaming anymore exactly, but I rented it and it's definitely worth every penny. I can confirm that. All right, so we've got a few more films to dive into before we head out of here. The next film after The Iron Claw was X-Men First Class. This is for an X-Men-centric episode, so I'll kind of save my yapping for then. But a quick little review, X-Men First Class, incredible. It's really good. Not as good as I remember, but I really enjoyed it. I watched X-Men First Class a lot growing up. It came out in 2011. FX and TNT and FXX, whatever. They played this movie at least like 5 times a week. So I watch this film at least like 10 times a year. So I love X-Men First Class, always will, always going to have a little bit of nostalgia for me, and it never gets old. After X-Men First Class, I watched Over the Hedge, another episode that's going to be happening pretty soon here. Going to be getting its own like 40-minute podcast episode, so kind of save my yapping for then. But TLDR, this movie makes me really emotional, really sad. I love it. I've watched it twice this year, like 5-6 times last year. I can't remember, but I love it. It's really good. That same day I watched Over the Hedge, I went to the IMAX theater to see Hereditary. This was a one-night-only thing with A24 and IMAX. This movie on IMAX screen is just really incredible. I never really saw this film until I saw it in IMAX. After I saw Hereditary, it kind of just infused my love of movies a little bit more, because seeing a film in a theater with an audience, a group of strangers that you never met before, it just adds this beautiful euphoric experience to really anything in life. I still remember a lot of theater experiences like it was yesterday. I can go through a theater experience from like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, and I'll remember it just absolutely perfectly. Hereditary is incredible. It's a horror masterpiece that you should definitely go see. But specifically, I would just want to say thank you to A24 and IMAX for really just doing this, because it kind of just infused my love of really life in general. After Hereditary and IMAX, I dived into Cars 3. This is the final film inside this trilogy, and maybe the worst. Now, I did rate Cars 2 lower than Cars 3, but I think that Cars 3 is a bad film because it's kind of heartless. It's kind of just meshed together this random ending to this trilogy that never really happened. It's more of a sequel to the first Cars movie and trying to fix what was the second Cars movie. So all in one, it's a sequel to the Cars movie and also trying to be a just fixing the version of Cars 2 that we got, and also being the climactic ending to this trilogy. So it's trying to do a lot. Everything's kind of there. It feels hollow, though. It feels soulless. It feels heartless. There is a good character. There are good themes, but nothing really feels earned in this movie. Now, I want to love Cars 3, but I never really will be able to. I love Jackson Storm, though. He's really cool. But this movie, it just isn't there. Maybe one day it will be, but Cars 3, sadly, is just a disappointment. Now, after Cars 3, a movie that I really wanted to do a review on but really never did for some reason, Challengers, which came out in 2024 from Luca Guadagnino. This movie is incredible. It's masterful. It's amazing. Believe the hype. Challengers has really felt like the only movie online in the past few days, and it's definitely for a good reason. This movie's awesome. It's incredible. I didn't think it was going to be bad, per se, but I never thought that Challengers would be this good. I mean, just from the score, the acting, the tennis sequences being some of the best sequences of the entire year, this movie is a pleasant surprise. I'm not going to say too much about Challengers. I want you to experience this film in all of its true glory, but Zendaya and Mike Fast and also Josh O'Connor, all three of them, a three-headed goat, just really incredible acting by all three of them. The directing's there, the score's there, the cinematography, the costume design, it's all just incredible. An overall pretty simple movie, a pretty simple plot, but it's just really so good. There's something about simplicity in filmmaking that can make it just that much better. A film not doing too much, but still somehow striving to be great is something that is just will never get old. And I will admit, Dune Part 2 is still my baby. It's still number one of the year for me, but Challengers is a very close second. If Dune Part 2 didn't come out this year, then Challengers would be an easy number one. I gave Challengers a very, very incredible 4.5 out of 5. It should be a 5 at this point, but whatever. Go see Challengers in theaters. This isn't sponsored. I wish it was, but Challengers really is one of the best films of the year and of the decade. Go see it. We got a couple more films to dive into here for the month of April. I dive into Before Midnight from Richard Linklater. This movie caps off the Before trilogy, and Before Midnight is one of the greatest finales to a trilogy that I've ever seen in my entire life, by far. There's a lot to love with this trilogy that I can't really say all in this one little blurb here, but I think that trilogies should just get better as they go on, and really more mature as they go on. This movie gets just so much more emotionally mature, so much more themes and just characters that really make me think about life and just getting older and getting older with a partner as well. Before Midnight is the realest in this trilogy. It's the most raw. It's the most emotional. You may cry in this one like I did, but it's just that good. It's deserving of your time and deserving of your presence. This whole Before trilogy, I gave a 9 out of 10. It's my consistent score for this entire trilogy, and you should watch it. I'm not sure what you're doing if you haven't seen this trilogy. I'm not sure where you can find it, maybe on HBO Max, but I think you should watch it. Whether you rent it, whether you buy it, watch this trilogy as soon as possible. And for my last watch of the entire month of April, I watched The Parent Trap from Lindsay Lohan. This wasn't going to be my last film of the month, but I watched it and it was so good that I just needed somewhat of a brain cleanser because this movie is just really good. It's just solid. It's incredible. It never gets old. I don't think I've ever seen this movie. Maybe little bits and pieces, but I don't think I've ever truly finished The Parent Trap. I mean, this movie isn't doing a whole lot that is crazy complex and crazy interesting. I mean, kind of bland at some points, but what it's doing and how it's doing it is just incredibly charming. I mean, from Dennis Quaid and Natasha Richardson giving incredible performances, and also Lindsay Lohan giving an incredible performance. She had me really convinced that there was actually twins of her at some point in this movie. And also, speaking of the twins in this movie, the twin effect of The Parent Trap is better than a $300 million movie that released last year. I'm not going to say its name, but you know what I'm talking about, and it makes me really sad. And even though The Parent Trap is a remake, I just have to admit that you can't deny that Hollywood is just on a deep downcline of just quality going all the way down, and also just creative bankruptcy just going through the roof. A lot of the movies this month are just remakes or reboots or just adaptations of something, which makes it a little bit sad. A lot of my favorite films from this month and just coming out later this year are remakes and sequels and reboots. I need something more. I need something a little bit original. Once again, like I said in a previous podcast episode, I don't know how long ago, we're kind of just evolving into a point of simplicity in filmmaking. Filmmaking that is very simple, not a lot of, you know, crazy CGI shots and spectacle. Something chill of a shot reverse shot is just all that you really need in cinema sometimes. The Parent Trap is everything that I want in movies, a very just simple comfort watch of a film, and this is definitely one of my favorite films of all time already. I gave it a 4 out of 5, but it should be a 5 out of 5 because it's just that good. Well, that is everything that I watched in the month of April. Overall, 28 films, 28 incredible films, pretty solid flicks. Not all 28 was exactly incredible, I lied about that, but all 28 were somewhat enjoyable, had a somewhat fun time with all 28 flicks. But I really want to know, what did you watch in April? Because most likely it was better than me, so sound off below. We have a little fan mail feature down there now, which is kind of weird. And also, if you're on Spotify, you can answer that question down there as well. Make sure you follow us on all of our socials linked down below in the show notes, and also follow me on my letterbox, most importantly. Make sure you also share the show. It's the number one way for us to grow. And even by listening, you help us so much. You keep the lights on. You keep the fridge full. This podcast isn't possible without you being a patron listener, and I love you for that. Until next time, we'll see you guys very, very soon. May the 4th, we're going to have our Star Wars ranked episode, very long overdue. And also the week after that, we're going to have X-Men First Class, Over the Hedge. I may be doing Meet the Robinsons, I'll find out. We're also going to be doing Wolverine. A whole lot of episodes that I don't know how I'm going to pull off here. If I'm able to pull it off, it might just be one of my greatest comebacks of all time, but we're going to have to see about that. Well, let me go ahead and stop on my yapping and get you guys out of here. Until next time I see you guys, stay swagged out, stay cool, watch more movies like every single day. And until next time, I'm your host Logan, and I'll see you guys in the movies.